Here is some typical failure mode if we test a shear wall under the lateral force, on applied force on the top of the wall. Also, we can call this type of shear load a racking load. So, these three types of failure modes can be observed. The nail pulls through. The nail tail out because of the weak property of the sheathing panels. Or it might be the nail connection is too close to the edge. And then the fatigue failure mode, nail head fracture. So the nail head broken. For example, under the reverse cyclic load. And another important type of failure mode, not showing in this one, is the nail pull through. Nail pull out, withdraw. Because of less penetration, you can see that if you nail, you put a nail into the wood member, if the nail is short and the penetration length is not long enough, this sheathing panel might have out of plane buckle. So it will pull the nail out of the framing member. So this horizontal force will also create the overturning forces on the both ends of the this wall. If we use simple free body diagram analysis, right? You have this moment V times the height of the height of the wall should be balanced by these two vertical force times the width of the wall, right? It's a moment equilibrium. So we can estimate the shear capacity of this type of walls is the total shear load, for example, in the unit of kilonewton and divided by the width of the walls. But as an engineer, you can use a simple way to check the design shear strength for different type of shear walls. For example, for different type of the panel products, sheathing panel products, different thickness, minimum penetration framings, which consider the penetration of the nails into the wood member, and the common nail diameter. For example, you might use bigger nails, and this type of nails might provide a better capacity. And of course, nail spacing. If you put more nails along the edge of the sheathing panels, you might expect higher in-plane resistance of the shear walls. So I'm going to show you an interesting figure about how these nailed connections behave in the wall system. This is the sheathing material. This is the underlying wood framing members. So under the lateral load, they're going to move relatively along the opposite directions. You push this, and you push this, so this wood medium will be functioning as compression-only medium. So it can only carry compression load, not tension load. So the gap will create when you push and pull and push and pull. This is a very interesting phenomenon. It will create very interesting features if you look at the hysteresis of this type of connection. We call it a pinching effect. So in the middle, the energy dissipation will be reduced. And of course, if you use different wood species to construct a wood shear walls, there are species adjustment factors. Douglas fir larch, you know the Chinese name of Douglas fir? It's the most commonly used North American species, probably the most famous species. You know the Chinese name? Hua qi song. Douglas fir, large. Luo ye song. Oh, I think when I was a little kid, my grandpa already mentioned this type of species. Actually, in old days, the U.S. or probably, I don't know if Canada, they exported a lot of material from North America to China, this type of material. And this is Western hemlock and Amabilis fir species combination, SPF, spruce, pine, fir group combination, northern species. So basically on the engineering property of this type of material, you have this adjustment factor. Here, if you sheath a wood frame with gypsum wallboard, you know, gypsum wallboard is designed to provide fire resistance, but it can also be used to provide lateral resistance for wall systems. But compared with normally structural panel sheathed walls, their lateral capacity is significantly lower. If you look at these numbers, right, compared with the previous OSB or plywood sheathed walls, they're much lower. So, of course, the capacity of gypsum wallboard sheathed walls is also related to the thickness of the panels and the wall configuration. If you install the blocking members or you don't install blocking members. So, as I mentioned, when the shear wall is carrying lateral load, it will also introduce the vertical load, very high vertical load. So we need to design metal connectors to resist this type of vertical load and transfer the vertical load, vertical force, to the foundation. So we use this type of metal hardware, we call these hold downs, to hold this end studs down. It's a hold down device. Usually they are proprietary type of special products from the hold down manufacturers. And we use these anchor bolts to transfer the lateral shear force to the foundation. So a few facts about shear wall hold downs. Of course, you can estimate the capacity of individual bolted connections in the hold down, then estimate the overall capacity of the hold down devices. However, in most of cases, manufacturers of a hold down provide design values for different types of hold downs because it's their product. They do tests and they tell you the design values. And the vertical forces are transferred from panel sheathings to the vertical end studs. So as I said, sheathing panels are very important to transfer the horizontal load, even to transfer the vertical load. And then the direct anchorage through hold-on devices are preferred. And then multiple end studs are very common in the wood frame constructions. You will see these double wall studs or triple wall studs in a lot of wood frame constructions. And however, the double hold downs are rarely used. But of course, it depends on how much vertical force you need to transfer. Depend on your calculation. Here's one example of this heavy duty hold downs with pretty big bolted connections and try to transfer the vertical loads. And here, the same idea to transfer vertical forces in between the stories. The vertical forces from the upper structure need to be effectively transferred by this rod, a steel rod, to the lower structures. Here's another interesting example for the plywood sheathed walls with dense nailings. We know that the commonly used nail spacing might be 50 millimeter, 2 inches, 75 or 100 millimeter, which is 4 inches, or up to 300 millimeters, about more than 12 inches. So, what if the nail spacing is fairly small? In the standard shear walls, we connect the sheathing panels on the narrow edge of the blocking members. There might be problem because there was not enough space to connect the sheathing panels with the blocking members, because the width of these 2x4 members, for example, is only 38 millimeters. So it's going to be really dense, right? So what you're going to do is to flap these blocking members, turn it into 90 degrees, pretty flat. So there will be more space to nail the connections, to nail the sheathing panels with the blocking members. So as I said, an effectively designed shear wall, the shear forces need to be effectively transferred from the top to the foundation. What about this one? No edge nailing, right? So this is not an effectively designed shear wall. And this one, might not be a little bit fuzzy. This is actually some edge nailing, but these nails were overdriven. So it penetrated into the wood panels too much. So what does it mean? Which means the sheathing panels this nail had is driven too much into the wood. So it's just like you are reducing the thickness of the sheathing panels, which will greatly reduce the capacity of the nail connections. Now I'm going to talk about the shear walls with partial anchorage. The previous examples I show you is called a fully anchored shear wall system. You design hold downs to prevent overturning uplifting forces, and you design anchor bolt to resist the lateral shear forces, horizontal shear forces. So what if you don't design fully anchored system under lateral load? For example, this case, you might have a hold down here, and on this side, the hold down is missing. So, but still, the wall needs to carry the lateral load. There will be uplifting forces in this case, or if you change the direction of this force, right? Either uplifting or the contact between the end and the foundation. So, what's going to happen is that you're going to rely on this anchor bolt to provide uplifting resistance, which is not a very efficient way. So this will also cause this type of damage. Since you don't have the hold-on device, the sheathing panel needs to carry large amount of vertical forces. So you will see that this kind of vertical forces, there's moment arm, eccentricity between this force and this anchor bolt. So there will be moment created in the seal plate. We know that wood is fairly weak along the tension perpendicular to the grain direction. So this way might create problems. And also, if you look at this bottom nail lines, this nail will have two duties. The one duty is to provide vertical resistance, and at the same time, it needs to resist the horizontal forces because of the lateral horizontal force. So, double duty nails. You don't expect it will perform efficiently. So one solution for this case, you can use larger washer to provide a little bit of extra restraint for this boat, for this anchor bolt connection. Again, fully anchored shear wall system and a partially anchored shear wall system. You see that it will rely on the anchor bolt to provide. Researchers have done a lot of research to study the effect of partially anchored system. You will see that 100% of anchored up to 100% performance, right? If you reduce the amount of anchorage, it will significantly reduce the shear wall capacity. And I'm going to highlight this role of blocking members in the shear wall. You know that we try to transfer the horizontal forces effectively from the upper structure, from the top plate, to the sheathing panels, then to the blocking members, and to the lower panels, to the seal plate, to the foundation. Right? So you will see, if you take out these blocking members, the force cannot be effectively transferred. Blocking members are missing. Not a good, well-designed shear wall. So the wall system is going to behave like this. You rely on the bending of this wall studs to provide lateral resistance, which is not a good way for shear walls. So, but in our design code, we also provide the shear design values for this type of unblocked shear walls. So we take this type of walls, blocked shear walls with 600 millimeter stud spacing, with nail spacing of 150 millimeter on the panel edge and 300 millimeter on the field as a reference. Then you estimate, if you have different configuration of the nailings, and basically nailings, you can estimate a significant deduction of the shear wall capacity. As I just mentioned, because of a narrow edge of the blocking members, only 38 millimeter. So engineers came up with this solution using staggered blockings. So in this case, the top, the upper panels, the edge can be connected with the upper rower of these blockings. The lower panel can be connected with the lower row of the blockings. But this is not a direct load transfer, a direct load path. I'm going to show this in this diagram. The lateral force needs to be transferred from the upper panels, and then through the nail connections on the upper rows of blocking members to the blocking, upper row of blocking. Then the load, the forces are transferred on the wall stud. From the wall stud to this, the lower row of the blocking members, and then to the lower panels. It's a little bit too much, I mean, for this type of load transfer path. So it's not a very efficient way to design load transfer. But the only advantage is it's easier to nail. So you're going to ensure, okay, for carpenters, they might like this. This is another type of sheathed shear walls. We call this board sheathed or lumber sheathed shear wall. Basically, you use wood lumber members sheathed on the framing system, then providing lateral resistance. However, compared with the traditional structural panel sheathed shear walls, this type of shear wall system has much lower strength and capacity. So, it uses nailed horizontal and diagonal boards, as a sheathing. The shear load transferred through nailed connections. The individual lumber or the board typically not directly connected to each other. They connected with the underlying framing members. So this type of shear wall system are more flexible compared with the panel sheathed walls or diaphragms. Let's look at this horizontal or called the transverse lumber sheathing. So as I said, in between these pieces, there's no connections. They don't talk to each other, but they all connected with the underlying framing members. Can be wall studs, can be joists. When the shear force applied like this, it relies on this resisting force couple to provide lateral resistance for this type of system. Then this is the overall picture under the lateral load. You see, this is the moment created because of these two nailed connection connected between the bars and the underlying framing members. So there's very simple calculation method you can use to estimate the shear capacity of this type of system. What about diagonal lumber sheathing? If you use this type of sheathing mechanism, it's a little bit more efficient than the transverse board sheath system because you will see under lateral load, these diagonal boards were under compression or tension, depends on the direction of the horizontal forces. So basically, these type of connections connecting the boards with the underlying framing members governs the shear capacity of this type of shear wall system. So it really relies on the capacity of individual nailed connections as well as the number of this type of nail connections. You will see that L, the length of the system, S, nail spacing, right? Divided by the length divided by the nail spacing, that's how many, basically how many nail connections you're going to have. 45 degree because it has a oriented with 45 degree along the horizontal direction. This is a very interesting and simple design method.